Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, well, we have with us tonight a very, very special guest, Carol Matriciana, and we're going to be talking about Halloween. And, you know, here all across America, why the preparations are there, the pumpkins are out in the fields across America, people are getting them, they're preparing to celebrate Halloween in the schools. Yes, and in many churches across America, they'll be celebrating this witch's holiday. And, of course, Carol Matriciana certainly has a good grasp of what this is all about. And what we have to do is try to utilize this information to let people understand that America has become a pagan society. Our schools can celebrate the witch's day, the high holy day of the Satanists across America and witches. But we can't, of course, mention God in our schools. Carol, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's always a wonderful, wonderful pleasure. And hello, and beautiful Monterey Bay sounds just gorgeous.
It really is. Well, we're just blessed to be able to live here. I very often will go out after the program and just look out over a magnificent sweep of the bay here across down towards Carmel and Monterey. Mm-hmm. But I would rather live where I do. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about, of course, Halloween, because that's not so nice to look at. It's not so nice to contemplate how our children are being conditioned. Oh, it's just a fun day, trick-or-treat. They know nothing about the background of this. And certainly every witch understands the significance of Halloween, don't they?
Well, yes, and I think if people understood what witches and Wicca means, it's a seasonal, it's a religion of seasons and nature worship, and the various seasons have their particular names, and Halloween, or Samhain, which is really the season, spelt Samhain, is this particular special time with witches and Satanists and many, many pagans. And by the way, not all pagans necessarily are witches or Satanists, because paganism is the big umbrella, but of course all Wiccans are pagans and all Satanists are pagans. But this festival, Samhain, is known as the Fire Festival, and it comes at the end of the year. So it's a sort of New Year's celebration for pagans, the end of the old year kind of wanes out, if you will, and the new year comes in. It's sort of seen as not only the end of the witch's year but also the beginning, because everything in nature is cyclical, and so all this sort of part of paganism really focuses in on the cycles.
How about the Satanists? Do they celebrate Halloween as well as the witches?
Yes, they do. Yes, this is a very, very big holiday for them, because basically it's the holiday of death. And I think if people realize that this is the holiday of death, the end of the year, the death of the old year, and also they just need to look around the stores and see that death is glorified in the costumes, the tombstones, the ghosts, the skeletons, all of this represents death, and this is what this holiday is all about, celebration to the Lord of Death, Samhain.
And of course, we can celebrate Halloween in our schools, but don't you dare mention the name of Jesus Christ. We'll be back here in just a few moments here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Carol Matriciano. What would you say to the people who say, oh, well, you're just making an issue out of this? I mean, this really, it's just all fun. It really doesn't really mean anything at all. It's just a time when children can dress up and have a good time. And you're a killjoy pointing out that this is the witches' holiday. So what if witches do celebrate it? And what if Satanists do that? They're really not. These are just a bunch of crazies out there. Why should we have to change our good times just because that they celebrate this holiday as we do?
Well, there's some truth in that, and in some of the cases, I mean, obviously pagans are allowed to celebrate the holidays that they want to celebrate, but I think if they're given the freedom to celebrate the end of the this nature festival, which is one of the foremost ancient fire festivals, and that they're allowed to have their New Year, then surely, and with all its religious paraphernalia in the school systems, with everything that symbolizes Halloween and death and ghosts and goblins and the pumpkins and all the various different symbols that come with it, then surely the same freedom must be given to Christians who would like to celebrate perhaps Easter or Christmas in the schools. But you see, it's done to the exclusion of Christian holidays, that this nature festival can come into schools, utilize government schools' tax dollars, our tax dollars, and yet we can't celebrate Christmas in its authentic, with its authentic Christian message. We can call it the holidays, we can call it season's greetings, we can celebrate Easter as spring holidays, but we mustn't bring in the death of Jesus or the birth of Jesus or the resurrection or everything that that comes along with the symbols of biblically based holidays. So I think this is the biggest issue, that you know, if we're going to be multicultural and absorb, be fair with all worship as equals, so to speak, then let that be the case.
Well, of course, I think that there is an anti-Christian bias in our courts. I think there's an anti-Christian bias within our schools and our educational system. I believe that there is a conspiracy against Christianity in the United States today, and the fact that the church doesn't recognize it, in fact, it embraces some churches embrace Halloween, you know, because after all, it's culturally appropriate, everybody else is doing, why shouldn't we? I think this is really what bothers me, is that nobody wants to talk about the fact that there is an organized, orchestrated, coordinated conspiracy against Christianity in America today, and one day we will pay a price for it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Carol Matriciano. We're talking about Halloween, and Chris, Carol has a great video on this. It's called Halloween Trick or Treat, where she goes into the background of the movement that created Halloween. And then, of course, we're going to talk about another video that she has. Actually, it's a DVD. It's called Spiritual Warfare, but it has about 30 minutes of interviews with witches. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are witches. They don't wear pointed black hats. They don't turn into brown sugar. But they are people who are totally dedicated to casting spells, to trying to contact beings from another dimension. They understand there's another dimension out there. They understand that there really are spiritual forces that they can tap into. The tragedy is most Americans don't. Well, let's get on into Halloween, Carol. Let's talk about what this really is all about. What is Halloween? Where did it come from? And why do we celebrate it across America today?
Three very different questions and very important questions. First of all, the roots of Halloween are in the Celtic civilization. This civilization was in the British Isles, throughout Scandinavia, Europe, and stretched all the way to Asia Minor. And the Celts were people that spread across with tremendous bloody conquests across, you know, about 300 years, I suppose, before Christ was when they were at their apex in rule. But they were thoroughly pagan. They worshipped many, many gods and were ruled, in a sense, by kings. But the real power was in the hands of the Druid priests, a secret priestly society, the Druids, which ruled by terror and by sorcery. In fact, a very interesting thing, the kings even feared these mysterious druid priests, and when the king became too old to lead in the battle or to father children, they were sacrificed, the druids, the priests of the Celts, sacrificed the king to the gods, and he'd cut up his body cavity, open it while the king was still alive, and using his internal organs for divination and other magic, sort of whirl it and speak, you know, get messages from the internal organs. So one sees that the druids, it was all part of dark sorcery, dark magic, so to speak. And at this particular festival, at the end of the year, when it was believed that the veil between the old year and the new year was at its thinnest, and therefore the veil between this world and the other world was also at its thinnest, and it was a time that one could attract the spirits that they believed, the people that had gone before in reincarnation, of course that was an important part of the religion, but that they could attract these spirits down into their ceremonies and their rituals. So this was the god that was celebrated by the druids, by the priests and the Celts, was Samhain, pronounced Samhain. And it was their god of death, the most powerful god. And every year on this day, they believed that that they had to offer human sacrifices to the god of death, to Samhain. And in fact, in Julius Caesar's memoirs, when the Romans came in and conquered the Celts, they called the British the barbarians. Julius Caesar mentions this tall, 150-foot-tall wicker man filled with human beings that these barbarians, he calls them, were offering to Samhain, the god of this festival of death. And he was absolutely appalled. And in actual fact, they banned this particular type of human sacrifice during, you know, when the Romans took over the outward human sacrifice like this was banned, but of course we hear and have heard over the centuries that it has been continued in many covens and in many satanic rituals, that the blood is associated with having great power. You know, that the blood is mixed with all sorts of things in you. So although, of course, today when we interviewed the Celts and the Druids, who still actually are doing very, very well in Stonehenge and in Britain today, they try and separate themselves from their, obviously, from the priests of 300 years before Christ. They call themselves a white religion now, and that they don't do this, and that the Druidic religion has changed. And, of course, we hear that about witchcraft, that it's all white magic and everything's used for healing, and that they don't do a lot of things that were done during perhaps the medieval times, etc., etc. But as the years went on, Samhain was popularized, and under Roman domination the numbers declined, and the common people sort of just had various different ways of celebrating this. A lot of their games have come down to us. For instance, apple bobbing, a very popular form was to kneel down, you know, at a tub of apples. I remember doing this as a kid in England, that you put your head into the water, pull out an apple, and then put your head into flour, and your face is covered with flour. And all these things, though, have their root in divination, because the apple was peeled, and you try and keep your peel as long as you possibly could in one piece, and then you'd throw the peel over your left shoulder, and you'd gain special favor with the spirits. The peel was would whirl quickly through the air, and it was supposed to be a sort of apparition, a ghostly vision of the one that you were going to marry, or whatever, depending, you know, upon whatever the local custom was. But there were many, many superstitious customs that have been passed down into our Halloween games.
Well, I think what most people don't understand today is that the Druids still exist. They talk about being white, white Druids, and basically in contrast to the dark Druids, but both of them, of course, will try to access the supernatural power. And this is true of witchcraft. The witches, they say, well, we're white witches. It's the dark witches, that they're the bad ones. The same thing you'll find with witch doctors. I know when my wife went to a meeting in South Africa when we lived there with a white woman who was a witch doctor. She had lived in a native area. She wanted to identify with the natives there, and so she became a witch doctor. And she considered she could access white magic in contrast to the black magic that the evil witch doctors would contact. What people, I think, have to understand, there really is supernatural power out there you can tap into, but you do at the risk of eternal damnation. This is the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also what people don't seem to understand, that as a witch doctor, even if it's white or black magic, the point is that the source comes from, it's the same source, and whether the source appears or deceptively appears to be a healing or white source or ability, it's still the same source. And we see that very, very clearly, for instance, in the Harry Potter stories, where Harry is this young little witch. In fact, you've got the video that you sell, Harry Potter Witchcraft Repackaged, and in that I explain that Harry is this little 11-year-old witch, and of course in the second book he's 12, in the third book he's 13, and there are seven books showing each year as he goes along. But as he learns witchcraft, he becomes better and better and more skilled in the arts while he's at his boarding school of Hogwarts Witchcraft and Wizardry, where you've got the occult teachers teaching him. And in Harry's school, he celebrates Halloween as well, and the ghosts and goblins are all there to be dressed up. And so once again, in the witch's world of Harry Potter, Halloween is glamorized and made great fun. But the incredible thing is that Harry, who is seen to be a white witch with white magic and who uses it only for good, his magic wand is traced back to the same source as the evil Lord Voldemort in the stories. So they both have the same source of magic, but Harry's is supposedly used for white. The evil Lord Voldemort uses his for black. However, when Harry gets angry or upset, then he also uses his magic powers to do naughty things like punish his auntie and blow her up, make her fatter and fatter and fatter, or put little curses and hexes on school friends that he doesn't like. So what it shows is that even a white witch, no matter, even if they are plugged into white power, do use their power for evil intentions, or when they get angry, they misuse it or abuse it. And of course, in Harry's school, his occult teachers, the role models for hundreds of thousands of children worldwide who read these books, when Harry lies or steals, his teachers award him and reward him with more points for the house, or commend him, or whichever the particular story is, he's rewarded for telling lies or cheating or stealing. So there is a whole moral relativism being taught through these books, and of course that's what this white and black magic thing is. It's just moral relativism. There's no absolutes, quite contrary to biblical Christianity and biblical principles, where there are absolutes of good and bad and right and wrong.
Well, I think the most frightening thing is, Carol, is we actually indoctrinating our youth that this is perfectly acceptable, that witchcraft is perfectly all right. That young people many times develop their ideas, their morals, their worldview from what they read. And when children in public schools, and yes, even in Christian schools and Christian settings, are encouraged to read all about witchcraft and how wonderful and exciting it is, what sort of generation are we going to have next coming generation? There is an attack on Christianity today, and it's about time people begin to understand the true nature of what's going on. Carol has put out a great video on Harry Potter. We do carry that. We carry her DVD on the spiritual warfare, and of course we carry her video on Halloween. We'll be back here in just a moment to talk more about this with Carol Matriciana. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, our guest Carol Matriciana, and of course, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about perhaps the video you have on spiritual warfare that contains that section on witchcraft. How would that be?
Oh, that is a very, very interesting 30-minute program called Witchcraft Spell. And basically, one goes into trying to understand modern Wicca, this religion of old witchcraft that has completely changed its face. And the camera crew go into covens, interview witches, ask, you know, what they believe in, who they are, and basically they're teachers and computer programmers and parents and very, very normal people and want to be recognized as normal people that just basically believe that there is a force that can be tapped into, that there are spirits out there that can be tapped into, can be brought into the circle and give them power, good healing power, and power to do good and to do well. And it's very, very interesting because many people think that witchcraft, the religion, was a pre-Christian, you know, that it was a religion of the pre-Christian Europe, and it was forced underground by the Christian Church. But many historians actually disagree with that, and it's been very openly researched now that modern Wicca is only as new as probably about the 60s, with through the work of Gerald B. Gardner and Doreen Valenti. It became more popular in the 60s, and in England, the Witchcraft Act was repealed in only 1951, and this is the time when Wicca went public with this whole cult of witchcraft, and Gerald B. Gardner gave it the name, rather than witchcraft, to Wicca. And it's basically a religion that centers in on the horned god of fertility and the great earth goddess, mother goddess earth. And we see it now being politically correct, the worship or the adulation, if you will, of nature being done through the political voice of environmentalism. And, of course, the worship of the feminine female fertility cult being done now through the feminist movement. So we see it all being given politically correct names. But Gardner, Gerald B. Gardner, is credited with introducing this term Wicca, as I said, and it was the Dianic Wicca focuses on the goddess as the supreme being and usually excludes men, and Wiccans share a belief in the importance of the feminine principle. They have a deep respect for nature and a pantheistic and polytheistic worldview.
Carol, what about the witches? There have been witches going back for thousands of years. So what about the witches in Salem? Certainly, weren't they witches? Haven't there always been witches? So why is this something of a fairly modern tone?
Well, in actual fact, what historians are showing is that while certain witches tried to make out that this was a pre- Christian religion, that it was always around, that it's as old as the hills. In certain ways it is. I mean, we know from a supernatural point of view, from a biblical point of view, that Satan, who's inspired all of this, has been around since the beginning of time. But historically, the witchcraft of the Middle Ages basically died right there. I mean, when Salem, the massacres and all that, the witchcraft of the Middle Ages has basically finished and went underground, and there's this new revival.
Hold right for a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana. Please go ahead and pick up your story and explain about modern-day witchcraft.
Well, I think the thing is that all the witches today, while they try to associate themselves with this sort of pre-Christian concept of always being around, this is a brand new, a very, very new witchcraft that has come out of the 60s. The witchcraft of the Middle Ages, in the midst of the darkness that prevailed during the Middle Ages, there was a mighty revival of witchcraft and Satanism, and that was a very different type of blackness, if you will. It was a completely different type of outpouring, and I think it went by the time that the Salem trials came, that particular brand of witchcraft just really disappeared, in a sense, from the culture. But the modern revival, the one that has come in right now, that is very, very aggressive through the feminist movement, the environmental movement, the worship of, or the adulation of nature, and the sort of rise of the importance of the feminine principle, this is a whole new rise of feminine worship, and we see it coming into the churches through the neuter friendly, the gender friendly translations of the Bible, where God is not allowed to be a male, so to speak. The prayers are now offered to Mother, Father, God, and women are allowed a place in the church, and homosexuals are being introduced into the church. So this is a new political sort of whitewash, if you will, a different type of religious, political religious spirit that is creeping in. And of course, the idea of making it white and friendly and fun can be seen at this time of the year in Halloween, where it comes into our schools, where teachers many times will proclaim that witches are just ordinary people to their young pupils, give them lessons on herbs, and talk about witches as sort of white doctors, witch doctors of health. And so, you know, there's a whole new teaching being given to young children who are also, remember, being raised with television shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, this new program, Witch, W-I-T-C-H, where these five teenage girls draw down powers. So it's a whole child-friendly new type of witchcraft that is saturating our children. I mean, if your listeners go to Barnes & Noble's or any big bookstore, they can just look in the racks next to the Harry Potter racks and see amongst the New Age books a whole variety for teenagers. There's the Teen Witch Kit, Everything You Need to Make Magic, where this religion of drawing down power from the moon or drawing down spirit beings to come into yourself is presented in child-friendly, easy-to-read spell books. Now, this type of witchcraft was never around in the Middle Ages. So that's what I'm saying. Historians are showing it's not the same type of witchcraft. And many modern Wiccans are also admitting that their historical genealogy, if you will, just can't go back to that faith of the Middle Ages.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Carol Matriciana or have a question or comment. Why, we would love to hear from you, because I think this is really so vitally important that people really understand what we're up against. There are dark spiritual forces in our society today. There really is another spiritual dimension. This is not being taught in our schools. Many of our churches are embracing Halloween. Our society embraces Halloween, and which is a witch's festival. And all we hear about, of course, the poor witches of Salem. We don't ever comment on the fact that the witches are back in Salem. They are increasingly powerful, and of course, they're casting their spells across America today. Well, we're going to be back here in just a couple of moments here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. email. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 831-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And our guest is Carol Matriciana. We're talking about the truly spiritual battle that is going on in America today. And the average individual has very little idea. But, you know, what we're seeing, we're beginning to see, I think, God's judgment coming onto America. We're seeing storms like we've never seen before. We're seeing earthquakes, and people are saying, well, it's just coincidence. We're seeing a war that's dragging on and on and on in the Middle East. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, this is just the prelude to much expanded war over there, whether we get George Bush or whether we get John Kerry. They're both members of a secret society that is so secret they won't even talk about it. And I believe behind this secret society are powerful, dark occult forces. We know that this secret society came out of a secret society in Europe. It was in Bavaria back in 1832 and has been carried on here, working behind the scenes with the people who control our CIA, the people who control our banking, our industries, certainly working at the highest echelons of our government. Does God bring judgment on a nation? I think he does, and I really believe we're going to begin to see God's judgment, because I believe the Christian church has failed to address the real problems of our time, address the true nature of the spiritual battle we're in. What do you think about that, Carol?
Well, I know Dr. Stan through personal counseling, where parents have brought children to me that have been dabbling in various things. They get introduced to powers, just sort of fun dabbling through a book, through Harry Potter books, through Goosebump books, in this film that we talked about earlier, Supernatural Powers.
Hold that thought, hold that thought for just a moment here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carol was saying that she, of course, counsels families, she counsels children who have been introduced to the supernatural through the books, the Goosebump books and other similar ones, that a lot of parents think this is just fun for their children. It's all make-believe, but, well, it's sort of like playing with a Ouija board. It's really fun until you realize you've tapped into the supernatural power. So take up the story from there, Carol.
Well, in the film, The Supernatural Powers, The Battle Between Good and Evil, the DVD, which has the special witchcraft spell program in it, there were also children that I interviewed and children that are a little bit older now that got involved in the supernatural world. And you were saying, does this actually exist and is it truly there? And yes, it is. I mean, it is there, and I think children... and people really don't understand the dangers of it until it's almost too late. But they get addicted to horror films or movies or entertainment. And there have been numerous very scary scientific research information showing that children are involved in copycat crimes and murder through watching too much television or, you know, too much of these, being involved in mass media, whether they're video games, just like the Columbine kids, the two children that murdered 13 other children had been involved in video games and Satanism and, you know, the statistics of, gruesome murders. Through children watching too much stuff, we know that it takes over, and this isn't just demented children. This is a sort of even though people might not want to believe that it's more than being mentally imbalanced. It's something happens to children. Things come into them, you know, and they will tell you very openly that. I mean, in these interviews in the Supernatural Powers DVD, these kids said that dark things came into their dreams. We hear in the Harry Potter books that Harry Potter talks about these kind of dreams that he has and what happens. And we see that there's just, you know, children mimic things. Children learn to a large degree to mimic the behavior of adults around them. We know this to be a fact, and one of the most famous examples of how children mimic what's on television in movies was several years ago in England, there was this horrible horror movie, Child's Play 3, and the murder of a 2-year-old James Bulger by two little 11-year-old boys. The judge in England said how extraordinary it was that the movie presented some horrifying parallels to the actual murder of this little 2-year-old boy. And the movie was viewed repeatedly by one of the little killers, the 11-year-old. And, you know, the judge noted that in the horror movie, the baby doll, sort of who comes to life and gets blue paint splashed on his face, and there was blue paint put on the dead child's face, and the movie depicted a kidnapping, and James was kidnapped by the two 11-year-old boys who, before they killed him, and then the climax of the movie comes as these two young boys murder the doll on a train, mutilating the doll's face, and James was also mutilated and bludgeoned by the two older boys and then left on the railroad tracks. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that children mimic things, they see things again and again, they get desensitized by horror, and you know, we have got absolutely appalling statistics, which I bring out in the film that you're carrying, Gods of Entertainment, which shows that our kids are being targeted by the mass media, 32 million American children being targeted by them, and that they watch thousands and thousands of hours of television. By the time they're 17 years old, they've watched 40,000 hours of television. So incredible images are coming into our children and desensitizing them, and they're seeing witchcraft and supernatural powers being continually put on with tremendous special effects where they see this all working, and, you know, it's bends their minds. I mean, it's just incredible when you think that that there are dozens and dozens and dozens of murders in every hour of prime time television. Our children may see from 800,000 to 1.5 million acts of violence and witness 192,000 to 360,000 murders on television by the time they're 17 years old. This is absolutely horrifying, you know, when you think that since 1955, TV characters have been murdered at a rate of 1,000 times higher than real world victims. So if we saw the same murder rate applied to the general population, everyone in the United States would be killed in just 50 days. And here are our children being desensitized and desensitized and desensitized by the mass media. And, you know, for what? What is happening?
Well, I think it was so interesting. It's a little off the subject, but it was 60 Minutes, I think it was this last Sunday evening, where they were interviewing that children, I shouldn't say children, they were college students, and there were maybe about 15 of them, you know, various levels in college. And one of the questions was asked, I think it was Steve Croft who asked the question, how many of you support same-sex marriages? Every hand went up. Why do they feel that way? Because they've been taught that in school. Taught it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And they're starting right now in kindergarten to go after your child, to, of course, bring them into sexual perversion, to try to get them to believe this sort of thing, tolerance. Everything goes, homosexuality is perfectly all right, maybe we'll be homosexual, lots of nice people are homosexual. And by the time they get to college, why, of course, they've accepted this as being a perfectly normal. But the same thing, repetition as far as introduction to the occult can have exactly the same impact on them. Repetition as far as violence is concerned. And then we wonder why our society seems to be crumbling from within. It's not happening by accident, ladies and gentlemen. It's happening by intent. And one of the things in this one video that we were talking about, Carol was talking about, the gods of entertainment, I think is so important, and that is an interview that she has with somebody who works in Hollywood. What was he? Was he a director, a producer? What did he do?
He was the director of the, I think what you're going to talk about is the documentary that came out that supported the making of Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. And behind the feature film, there was a documentary, and I interviewed the director of that documentary. I think that's what you're going to
do. That's what I was. And of course, you were talking to him about Hollywood, and what did he tell you on film about what's really going on in Hollywood?
Well, we all think that money is what Hollywood is after, and that films that make money are obviously what Hollywood will support, but that is absolutely not the point, because here we had the film The Passion, which was the number one bestseller in the world. I mean, made the most money in the first days, the most money in 3 days, the most money in 5 days, and yet Hollywood didn't support its making. Mel Gibson had to make it out of his own funds, and even when Mel Gibson had finished making it and gave it to the studios, asked the seven major studios if they'd distribute it, they said no, and yet it made so much money. But what this director was saying is that the point is that because this film was so accurate and true to the Bible, to the last 12 hours of Christ in the Passion, had it shown Christ as a homosexual, the Hollywood executives probably would have supported it, the industry probably would have gone behind it as they did with The Last Temptation of Christ. But because it so accurately portrayed biblical principles and lifted up Jesus Christ as a true biblical character that he is, they would not do it. And this director said that it's very, very obvious that there's a much greater agenda in Hollywood, and it's the anti-Judeo-Christian agenda. It's the anti-Judeo-Christian thinking. That is their biggest agenda. That they are just anti-biblical, traditional values, and they teach a whole set of new values to children, to this generation of kids that is the largest ever marketed to generation in the world. These 12 to 14 year olds, 32 million American teenagers are trying to be built to their $150 billion, and there is a strong, strong anti-Christian moral ethical teaching coming out of Hollywood.
And I think that you have to realize this is far more important than money. And if when you understand that this really is this intense hatred of Christianity, then you can begin to get some grasp of what's really going on in our society today. That video is called The Gods of Entertainment, and I think it's excellent. We carry that as we carry Carol's other videos, Spiritual Warfare, her video on Halloween, her video on Harry Potter, and is there one other that I missed?
Is it the supernatural powers, the battle between good and evil, the one that we're talking about right now?
Right. Well, we were actually talking about the gods of entertainment, because that's where that interview was. But then, of course, you have death by entertainment as well. So we carry about five of Carol's videos and DVDs, the spiritual warfare. We carry that in DVD, and that has the extra 30-minute with the interviews with the witches, which we think is so important. You get a first-hand view of the witches and their ceremonies, and of course, talking with these witches, they look just like everybody else. But of course, they've gone over to the dark side without even realizing it, because they're tapping into the supernatural power, which is there, which has been there since the beginning of time. They've tapped into the other dimension. Well, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Carol, would you like to get your website out so people could know how to get in touch with you?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I spell my name Caryl, and that is the name on the website. It's www.caryltv.com. Caryl TV, short for television.com.
All right, fine. That's Caryl, Caryl, TV.com, and you'll get some fascinating material there. And right now, of course, we've got Alan calling. And Alan is calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Alan. How are you doing?
Oh, great, great. It's a very interesting program. I've been listening to it. And I feel very strongly about the problems with violence in the media and the desensitization, as you're calling it, of children and people that don't know better. I was curious, though, about the movie The Passion of Christ, I found that to be a very violent movie, too.
But it was a different type of violence. And if you understand the Christian story, this is something that Christ had to do. In other words, the life wasn't taken from him. He gave this. He was the Lamb of God, and he had to be sacrificed. The tradition, certainly of the Old Testament, was that forgiveness of sin comes only with the shedding of blood. Christ was the Lamb of God, and the violence in here was certainly a stimulating thing, not certainly something that I thought was in any way would tend to want anybody to have this sort of thing. In fact, the people who were involved in inflicting the violence, you could see that many of them were even very disturbed themselves about what was going on. How would you respond to Alan, who's saying, well, but look at the violence in the Passion of Christ?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Alan. It is horribly violent, and I think that the incredible thing is that this is it, that God himself was prepared to take on the violence of sin. A man who knew no sin, a God that knew no sin, was prepared to take on the violence of that sin himself on that one body, all the sins of the world. So in that sense, you're absolutely right, but the violence that is being shown again and again and again on television, the constant horrible murdering of people, the numbers I mentioned earlier, just in the thousands and thousands, is desensitizing children who mimic those murders and then go out, for instance, at the Columbine Massacre and go out and kill their fellow friends or, you know, take guns and kill grandparents and aunts and uncles because they've been watching certain films. So there's a difference between having violence on for the sake of violence as entertainment in a way, or what Mel Gibson did was to show that God himself was taking on the horrible wickedness and violence of sin so that mankind could be freed to have a relationship with him in eternity.
Yeah, I see your point, but I still found it to be needlessly violent. The imagery is still there, you know.
Well, yes, and that the point is that that's a historically true story. I mean, that's the last 12 hours of a man on Earth, and he went through absolutely hideous, horrible violence. And
Alan, how would you have portrayed it? How would you have portrayed the scourging of Christ, the crucifixion of Christ, the suffering of Christ for the sins of mankind? If you'd been the director of the movie, how would you have presented it?
Oh, I wouldn't have been involved in something like that. I just feel like it's just too unhealthy to dwell upon. I'd rather think about the positive aspects.
I see. And so are you a Christian?
I used to be.
But you're not anymore.
No.
Did you see the film?
Yes. I saw part of it. I wasn't interested in watching the whole thing. I've heard the story before, and it's very hard to explain. But I still see that as being a part of the violent culture, and I think that the message, however it's explained or justified, there's still the message there of violence, and I don't know how to stop that. Apparently there is money to be made from violence in films, and as long as people buy the stuff, there's going to be a market for it. I don't know what to suggest as a solution.
Well, do you think that there was a difference between what Mel Gibson did in trying to demonstrate by film the sacrifice of Christ for the sins of mankind, and the wanton violence which is simply being put out to promote money? Actually, Mel Gibson could have lost his entire fortune doing this. He did it because he wanted to get the message out, to point out that Christ died for you and I. In fact, it was you and I and our sins for which he paid the ultimate price.
And it was because of our sin that his death was so violent.
But of course, Alan, I just hope you'll keep listening to our program, will you?
Okay, thank you.
Good night, and God bless.
Oh,
okay, fine. All right, that was Alan calling from Santa Cruz, who used to be a Christian, is no longer, but he was offended by the violence. I thought it was beautifully done. I think there was only way really to project the story, but then good people will disagree.
I think it's a very good point that we should be offended by the violence that was put on to God for our sin's sake.
Good point. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this is the last segment of our program. Our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and of course we're talking about her videos, the ones she has, Death by Entertainment, Gods of Entertainment, Spirits of Warfare, the battle between good and evil, and of course that comes with in a DVD form as well as a video. With the DVD has an additional 30 minutes of interviews with witches and going into witchcraft, very professionally done, and then the video on Halloween trick or treat, and then of course the video dealing with Harry Potter. And I think it's so important that people understand that we are introducing our children into this other dimension. So Carol, we've just got a couple of minutes here before we have to let you go. So would you like, what are your thoughts, what message would you like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, you know, we started this program talking about Halloween, and I think that we can't get away from what this represents in our society. This is the Festival of Death, a focus in on celebrating death, where hundreds and thousands of people, either knowingly or unknowingly, are being involved in celebrations to the Lord of Death. And I think as Christians we must understand that through the suffering of Christ we have been given abundant life. And this is a wonderful opportunity for us to tell people that they can have abundant life, that we should be celebrating an eternal life that we have been given through, as your last caller, Alan, said, the horrible atrocities and vicious violence that was put on to God himself for our sins. And because of that, we have been given freedom and eternal life to live with God for all eternity. And this is a time we should be celebrating and telling people that that they have got an alternative, that they've got, that they can choose life rather than death.
Well, I really want to thank you so very much for being with us this evening. Our guest has been Carol Matriciana, and of course we've been talking about Halloween, the fact that there's some of our churches are even celebrating a Halloween with all sorts of entertainment, but much of this, of course, is getting into the absurd, getting into the occult, into the dark side. And of course, what we should not be doing is dwelling on the pagan festival that is being celebrated on the Halloween, or they call it All Saints Day, but it certainly has nothing to do with saints. It has everything to do with the dark side. Carol, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's always, always a pleasure to be with you.
All right, and again, one more time, get up your website for our listeners.
Yes, it's www.carryltv.com.
Bye-bye and good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the pills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to helping as we reach out across America by radio every five times a day. Some players in America were on the radio, certainly our early morning program in Colorado. We have an excellent listening audience there. Picks up almost all the major populated areas of the state other than Fort Collins, Colorado. And then, of course, we have our afternoon program that's heard on stations across America, or our evening program with a growing, ever-growing listening audience. It's actually on three various satellites every evening. What an exciting opportunity to reach people and try to get them to understand what's going on. On the other hand, of course, it's vitally important that we do have your support. If you agree with what we're doing, we hope you'll support us. If you don't, why, of course, you're not going to. But I believe America's in real trouble today. I think we've turned our back on our values. I think we've turned our back on the source of our freedom, which, of course, is God. And was our founding fathers who said that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, among which were life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to ensure these rights, governments were created among men, deriving their power, just power, from the consent of the governed. In other words, the government was created to preserve our God-given rights, the ones that come from the Creator. Boy, they sure don't teach that in school today. And that's why we're losing our freedom, for as Thomas Jefferson had said so well, God who gave us life, gave us liberty. But can the liberties of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever, and I believe that. I believe we're moving into terrible, terrible times in this country. Economically, morally, I believe there's going to be chaos in this country. I believe we're moving into World War III. I believe that we are going to war with Iran. I believe we're going to war with Syria. And I believe God is going to bring his judgment on this nation. Now, we're going to have to wait and see what happens, but I think that this next several years are going to be difficult times, and it really doesn't make one bit of difference between whether we have Skull and Bones member George W. Bush or Skull and Bones member John Kerry. As president, you notice how they sort of smile and talk to one another after the debates, and I always think they're probably saying to one another, boy, did we sure put it over on those folks out there. They probably don't know we're both going exactly the same direction, towards globalism, ever larger government, continuing the war over there, opening our borders for illegal aliens, because their dedication is not to America, no matter what they say, but to this globalist view of a new world order, a new world economic system, a new world currency, and, of course, a new world religion, because it all has to do with paganism, the other dimension, and turning our back on God. And these people got up and talk about their Christian beliefs, but, well, look and see what they're doing, not what they say. And so let me just simply point out, remind you that we are having a meeting on the 6th of November at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be a day-long meeting, and if you can come, we have to have reservations ahead of time. Lunch is going to be served. We're bringing in outside speakers. We hope you can come. That's the 6th of November. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Hope to get a good turnout. Things are looking very good at the present time, but I hope this will be the biggest meeting that we've ever had. So at this time, right after the election, doesn't really matter who's going to win, because the same policies are going to be continued. Why, this is the time to begin to regroup, to think about what lies ahead, and of course to understand the spiritual nature, the forces we oppose, or that are opposed to freedom. So, to our listeners out across America who will be leaving our network, we say good night. And for those, of course, who are staying with us, why, we'll be back here in just a moment or two. Pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please give us a call if you're out there, if you'd like to talk to our guests. But right now, please hold your calls. We have with us Georgiana Preskar, and we're going to be talking about her new book, Seeds of Deception. Georgiana, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your program. I am just so happy to be here and share this information with you.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, because we know that you've been very concerned about what's happening in our society, and you've written a book about it, and you're really concerned about what's happening to our children and in our schools. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about you and about your efforts?
Well, thank you very much. I love to share my story because I was a woman who had a career before she got married, and I was a nurse and decided after I was married to stay home with my children. And I did a few little odds and ends through those years to keep myself busy when the children were in school. But basically, when my children left home, I felt a little lost, but I was actually thinking about going back to law school. And I started going to lobby days and realized that there were a lot of very strange things happening in our country, and it was changing faster than I could keep pace. And so I thought, you know, rather than go to law school, I'm going to start exploring all this information. Well, eventually we got into our school district, and a lot of things that were happening in our school district that didn't seem right, and I started exploring more and more, doing more and more research, and came upon a program that actually was called SEED, Seeking Educational Equity and Diversity. And I realized that this program was very deceptive, and I thought, you know, perhaps these programs are the things that are causing our schools to change and to change the attitudes of our children towards our country, because that's really what I was starting to see. It was not the traditional town my children grew up in. I'm from Elk Grove, California, south of Sacramento. And when we moved here, there were 8,000 people, and now it's over 100,000, and it has changed dramatically, the attitudes, the people, and it's kind of like living in a strange land. So because of all these experiences, I was led into these paths that drew me to this program, research, and no one would listen, and so eventually I wrote my book.
All right, fine. Well, you know, of course, when you begin getting into what's really going on, it seems so absurd that to most people, that couldn't be going on. That's not happening in my school. That might happen in another school, but it's not going to happen in my school. My children aren't in danger. Mm-hmm. They have no idea that this is pervasive all across America today. So what were the sort of things you began finding in these programs?
Well, one of the things I found, first of all, is that this program was countrywide. So it's in like 33 states, and it's also in Europe, and it's in Hong Kong and Tokyo and Vancouver and Toronto. And one of the things that I found was that the biggest thing they want to do is transform. They want to change the American way, our founding fathers' principles, to a global identity for our country.
In other words, a new world order, a new world religion, a new world perspective for our children.
Yes.
What's the name of this program again?
This is called SEED. Seeking Educational Equity and Diversity. And it actually originated at Wellesley College, where Hillary Clinton went to school, the feminist university.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Georgiana Preskar. We're going to be talking about her book, Seeds of Deception. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Georgiana Preskar. We're talking about a book that Georgiana has written in an effort to get people to understand what's really going on today. And the average individual really doesn't understand, or if they do understand, they say, well, of course, this is not going to affect me or my children. So why don't you sort of pick up the story from there as you begin, realizing, of course, that they're trying to transform our children. These people are change agents, and they're using our public schools to attack the heart and the mind and the very soul of our children.
Right, and that's very true. The one thing I realized, though, is that so many people were not aware of anything that had been happening, including myself. I was an educated person who had no idea of what had really happened during the whole last century to get us to a place of willingness to accept these programs. And so what I really did was a lot of research on that, which is also in my book. And it's kind of the journey of me discovering the background of how we set ourselves up. And then these programs are really put in place by, of course, a whole society now where the women aren't at home. They're out working. They're not really watching what's going on with their children or in the schools. And they're giving their okays to a lot of their children even participating in these programs. But anyway, this program, SEED, is really a notorious program. Some people say, well, it's just like all the other ones. Well, it really isn't. It's 18 years old. And they have a very well-put-together program whereby people go and they get trained in the summer months to become facilitators. And they actually are given books and videos and different things like that and trained in what I like to call the dialectic thinking, because they really do train these facilitators on how to bring over people who participate in this program to a philosophy that everything is okay. You know, humanist philosophy.
All right. I think for our listeners out there mm-hmm. who do not understand the dialectic process right. and the term facilitator, what is a facilitator, first of all?
Well, a facilitator is somebody who actually makes things kind of happen. They really proclaim to be someone who isn't teaching anything in particular, but they are trained in a way so that they are able to bring someone from point A to Z very carefully through a series of steps. But the person who is being changed, they're actually taking a person from a set of thought processes to where they want them to be without the person knowing it.
And, of course, usually they stand up in front of the room and they may have a blackboard or a white piece of paper and they'll write things down there and they'll try to get your input from the audience. Is that how they sort of work?
Yes. Well, actually what they do within, it's actually this program takes place behind closed doors. So I can't go to it, you couldn't go to it, and even board members of the school can't go to it. Very selected teachers, parents, students go to it. So they come in and, you know, kind of with this great idea of, I'm going to make changes in the world.
Hold that thought there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking to Georgiana Preskauer. We're talking about the training of facilitators, and they train people as change agents to change the values of your children away from what you would have them believe, away from the traditional American beliefs of God and family and country, to the prepare them for the New World Order, the New World Religion, and they know how to control the reality. So pick up the story from there.
Yes, well, what they do then is these people go into this program really gung-ho about making a difference, and maybe it's a teacher in the classroom or a parent who's concerned about things in the world, or the students especially. So they go into these behind-closed-door sessions, and one of the things they use is called serial testimony. And they sit around in a circle, and everybody, the facilitator actually brings up a particular topic. And this particular topic, everybody talks about from in the circle. One takes a turn, 1 to 3 minutes, each person talks, and they keep doing that round and round and round, expressing their feelings about this topic. And no one is allowed to really discuss it, or there's no shame or guilt or anything like that. And at the end of the session, they are all these thoughts that everybody has talked about is put in what they call a holding container. And everybody joins in, you know, arms and hugs each other, and they all become one group of people, all with these different ideas that go into this holding container. And they become very bonded during these sessions that take place once a month for 3 hours. And very personal things are revealed. There's journaling that goes on. Well, anyway, the persons in there are trained. The facilitators are trained at these sessions, of course, these week-long sessions. But this is how they get the people into the groups and change their thoughts and processes. They are trained to be these facilitators to use different methods of the circle, journaling, all kinds of different creative things that they do, books, videos, this type of thing. And then they go back into the community, back into the classroom, and they do many of the same things within their classroom, within their work settings, within their families. And it's really a brainwashing, because once people go through this group and they make that transformation from their traditional values to their new ideas, it's very difficult to bring them back.
And, you know, it's really so interesting. What you're describing is exactly what they did to our prisoners in Korea, where they actually, in fact, I believe that our government was complicit in what happened. These men were abandoned to the North Koreans. They would sit them around in groups, and they would talk and talk. And then, of course, these testing sessions would go on all day long. Then they brought them back to the United States. They would use them with people who had deep emotional problems. They would get them all together and talk and talk and talk. And then they've taken this over. They're using it in our schools. What's even amazing is they're using similar techniques in many of our churches.
Yeah.
They call them the church growth movement. And everybody gets in these groups, and they sit around and they talk, and everybody puts over their ideas. We're going to talk about the Bible, a specific scripture. And everybody, what do you think? Well, what does your Bible translation say? Well, it's different than everybody else's. And so you got 15 different Bible translations, and, and the average individual is not in a position really to interpret a lot of that on their own. They need help. And instead of somebody saying, a teacher who says, this is what this means, no, it's, what do you think about it? How do you feel about it? That sort of thing. Go ahead.
Well, what's really interesting about this is there was one section of my book that I wrote about the purpose-driven church. And it's a smaller section of the book, but I had to put it in there. I felt that I was called to put it in there. And what's really interesting is that people are really being drawn to this book, and they're sharing it with other people, but they all call me, and at one point they go, we've been through the 40-day program. We, you know, we really got a lot out of it. And they're all calling me on it, you know. And I said, look, you need to research this further. I'm going to give you more information to read about it. And they do, and they're going, wow, you're right about this stuff. So it's an amazing thing. The one avenue that I thought maybe people wouldn't be too upset about, they are very upset about.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, the people, these are good people, and there are a lot of good ministers, but they've been taken in by a brainwashing process that is, everybody is as effective as the Amway. I've been to Amway meetings. Everybody is so enthusiastic about Amway. But what you don't understand is they're playing games with your mind. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is exactly what happens in the purpose-driven church. It is a matter of manipulation, and that's what they're doing in our schools, too, isn't it?
Yes, and you know, I tell you, I really feel it's very abusive to our children because they really are being trained with not being given the tools for a successful life in the future. They're not being given strong ethical codes, character development. And they really are being raised with an environment of everything is okay. And they're also being raised with the whole idea that we are oppressing them. The white people, it's called white privilege, which is very much a part of this program. The teens are being taught that we are indeed and have situated our country just for us and for no one else. And they're being taught this through books and papers and these sessions behind closed doors. And it's a very serious matter. It is growing and growing. To the point where now in our high school, they've actually put out a mission statement that says that that they are going to develop in their high school world citizens, capable of learning but not learned. That is the mission statement that has gone out in one of our high schools.
Capable of learning but not learned. Now that is really a great statement, because what that in essence says is we're going to be dumbed down. We're going to be citizens of the world. Dumbed down, if you're not learned, if you don't understand the lessons of the past, the great philosophers of the past, you don't understand what happened in Greece and Rome to their societies and their people, why, of course, if you're not learned, why, you're going to go through exactly the same terrible times that they went through when their societies collapsed.
Right, exactly. This is exactly it. And I really felt that I had to do something to get this word out about what is going on, because I really feel that at this time, as I know you do, and so many people who are working in this avenue, if we don't take a stand now and start turning things around, it will just keep going downhill. Because we're producing citizens with our younger generations that really do not understand anything about what we're about. They don't understand the Constitution. They don't understand the U.S. Bill of, you know, our Bill of Rights. They understand the U.N. Bill of Rights, but not ours. And so we really are producing people that are world citizens and not American citizens.
Well, see, they don't understand the difference between the American Bill of Rights and the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. In fact, so many of the books that they've read today will tell you, look, you're guaranteed more rights under the United Nations Declaration of Rights. I mean, guaranteed, housing and, and food and all of these things. These things are your right. Well, of course, they have never looked at the small print. You have all of these rights as long as they go along with the policies of the rulers.
Right. Well,
but, of course, whatever you are doing comes into conflict with the elite, why, of course, you lose those rights. In America, our rights come from God. And the United Nations, why the rights come from the ruler. And this is the antithesis of what America was about, and we've taken a 1,000-year step backwards. and the average citizen not understanding our Constitution, not understanding the foundations of our freedom, certainly not understanding these concepts of individual freedom under God, doesn't understand that they're going to lose their freedom, they are going to be enslaved, and that is what the ultimate plan is. Right. And behind that, I believe, are dark spiritual forces. But for those who don't want to talk about the spiritual aspect of it, then it's simply a matter of fact. Look and see what's happened in the countries that the United Nations gone into. First, they disarm the people, and then they're slaughtered, as they were in Rwanda. And they've done this in country after country after country. And, of course, the United Nations is not the solution to our problem. It is a major part of our problem today. And these ideas that are being put forward here in America are actually encouraging our young people to believe in the false promise of what I believe are wicked people who work in a godless organization. We finance, we call the United Nations.
Yes, and the other thing that I'm very concerned about also, when you talk about the teenagers, is the moral codes that they're being raised with in the schools. And we're trying to get it out of the schools based on the fact that the Supreme Court has actually deemed humanism a religion. And we feel that we can get some of these sex ed programs out of the schools by proclaiming that it doesn't belong in there. You know, that the way that they are teaching these sex ed classes are actually increasing the statistics of disease and pregnancies.
But that was what they were designed to do. I remember back in 1965 mm-hmm. debating this issue, pointing out
yes.
That, you know, in Sweden where they'd introduced these, why the pregnancy rates shot
mm-hmm.
up and of course, I mean, I'm old enough. I've been around for a long time, Georgiana. And
you're not that old. You can't be.
you know, but the average individual does not understand. The people who introduced this knew exactly what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't want the public to know.
Right, exactly. And I just think this is terribly abusive to the students because they really feel that their freedom comes in doing what they want to do morally. They think that that's okay, that it's dependent on the moment, the situationism type thing, that whatever is right at the moment is okay. And they get themselves into trouble both physically and emotionally. And they're scarred. And then they think it's okay to go out and have the abortion, and they're scarred even more. And so, you know, this is just terrible for our students. So, you know, we really have a goal here to try to get sex out of the schools. That way, I believe, we'll get homosexuality out of the schools also if we take these sex things out. So I think that we can, you know, work towards goals like that. That's what we're trying to do.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. When I went through medical school, why, we had, I think, 5 sexually transmitted diseases, syphilis, gonorrhea. We had a lymphopathyvenereum, another type of granuloma, and I've forgotten what the 5th one was, but I mean, other than syphilis and gonorrhea, there weren't really any really very serious, you know, sexually transmitted diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm watching television, and there's this real pretty girl there, and she says, oh, I want to be free, that's why I'm taking this wonderful pill for herpes, and you know, why at the end of a year, why 30% of the people haven't had a recurrence, now I can be free and do whatever I want to, and
right.
Shows with her arms of her boyfriend, yeah. and of course, human papillomavirus is being spread, and hepatitis B, and
yeah.
and all sorts of other terrible diseases are certainly AIDS and syphilis and gonorrhea. And of course, there's an epidemic of sexually transmitted disease, a direct result of the criminal activity that's going on in our schools. Everybody talks about, oh, pornography on the internet for our children. Children's pornography, why we've got to protect our children. We don't need to protect them from the television. We need to protect them from the schools.
Yeah.
We'll be right back here in just a moment with our special guest, Georgiana Preskar. And, of course, I hope that many of you out there will, if you have a question or comment, why, give us a call, and we're going to let Georgiana tell us more about her book called Seeds of Deception. Because, ladies and gentlemen, they are working secretly behind the scenes. The last thing they really want is for the parents to know what they've done to their children. Well, Dr. Stan, I guess this evening, Georgiana Preskar, how long has your book been out?
Well, it just came out last month, and it's actually Seeds of Deception, Planting Destruction of America's Children, because if you go to just Seeds of Deception, you'll get something about growing seeds. So.
Well, of course, there's another book by that Genetic Engineering. But
right, that's it. It's a Genetic Engineering. That was the
right.
one.
Okay, fine. Well, that's all right. Two books, maybe we can sell twice as many books.
I like that idea.
All right, fine. Well, of course,
yes,
now.
Actually, I'm very excited. I am a first-time author. And I do have to say that it was a real joy to write a book, a very interesting experience. And I had always wanted to write something, children's books. And so this is a far cry from it. However, it does deal with youth, and I'm very excited to have done this.
All right, fine. Well, we have somebody calling from San Antonio. Hi, how are you? What's your name, sir?
yes, my name's James.
All right, James, did you have a comment?
Yes, I had a comment, really, about the UN, or actually the building up there in New York, the big old black building up there, and I was wondering what would have happened if instead of the World Trade Center being hit, what if that building had been hit?
I don't think there's any way that that would have been hit. That has special protection. It was built at Turtle Bay, at a very sacred occult site. There was no way that was going to be hit. So it would not have made. They're just not going to attack the United Nations. You don't have to worry about that. Anything else you want to say?
No.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much for calling. And I know I think that the issue here is what how are we going to get this message out? Let's talk a little bit more about the book, the various things that you cover in this story.
Oh, yes. There's just some wonderful things in this because I get into, first of all, a history, a beginning of, it's actually a journey, and I kind of have it broken down into seasons, but as I go along, I'm learning more and more, and I get into Hitler's evil deception, paganism, the Nazi homosexual cause. I get into some of the deceptive lies of some of the legislation that have gone into place in different areas. I get into tolerance, multiculturalism, and diversity, and intimidation, the Homosexual Manifesto. I get into the systemic inquiry and transformation, and especially also into the white privilege and what they're doing with that. I get into the breakdown of the SEED program and into the dialectic also, and Silent Day, which is another big day throughout America that is just destroying our schools in terms of what they do on Silent Day. That's the day that they proclaim, where they give honor to homosexuals, actually. And
I think, you know, one of the things that's so disturbing to me is they're starting, you know, in the kindergarten in many places.
Yes, oh, definitely.
Beginning to indoctrinate our children that homosexuality is perfectly normal, and it's not normal.
No.
In fact, if you care about homosexuals, you're going to tell them what you're doing is going to kill you.
Yes, and it does. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But they're also deceiving the homosexuals because they're using them for a cause, too, which I think is really sad. Because they are definitely used as change agents to bring about our country to a different place. And it's sad for them because they don't tell them the fact that there is a way that they can make themselves different and come back into another place in their lives, and they're deceiving them. They won't let people come into the schools to tell them about how they changed from homosexual to heterosexual and what that really involves. And that's another deception. So there's so many lies that are involved in all this. And it is very serious because my book also talks about the Massachusetts scandal and the programs that went on there.
Well, hold on. I guess in just a moment we're going to let you tell about Massachusetts here. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Georgiana Prescar, and she was talking about the Massachusetts scandal. Tell us about the Massachusetts scandal. I hadn't heard of that one.
Well, that's really terrible because it happened at Tufts University, and they actually proclaimed that they were going to have an all-day session whereby people should come throughout the state to hear about, you know, diversity, and they said it was going to be a great educational program. Well, it wound up that some of the parents that were very concerned about this went also, and they recorded some of the sessions because they knew that some of these things were going on in the different districts that were getting very carried away in terms of what they were teaching about sexual lifestyles. And so they recorded some of the sessions, and I have got to tell you, I just can't even say some of the things online that went on in these sessions.
No, we don't. It's not the Howard Stern program.
Very descriptive things that were being taught to children that were ages 12 years old and on up during these sessions. They were terrible. And so, of course, the parents had recorded this, and they went back, and they tried to get something done about this, and they were fought all the way by judges in the town and by the school board. And
it just shows you how pervasive the evil is in our societies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So those are the types of things that we are dealing with. And I also have some things about pedophilia, of course, in the book. And, of course, the organizations like GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, who was behind so many of these things, and the books that they have produced that are just horrible books. Many parents think GLSEN is just such a wonderful group and people throughout our country. And they are definitely a group that is promoting this lifestyle as normal and including adult child sex.
And I think it's so important to understand what we're really talking about is organized evil. Now, you talked about tolerance because, of course, we're being told we just have to be tolerant. We could be sort of tolerant of everything, of course, other than Christianity.
Yeah.
So pick up the story there. How are they using this whole idea of tolerance? After all, you don't want to be bigoted. You don't want to be negative. You want to get along. And so we're destroying the children's belief in anything or any absolutes, anything right and wrong. There is no God. Then, of course, we can tolerate just about anything, can't we?
Yes, definitely. And tolerance really is a lack of conviction. And so I really don't think that it's a good idea that, you know, that we have to tolerate everything because we have to be able to stand for certain things. But they really are, and use language, for instance, you know, I mean, they're, you know, if you're against anything, then you become a homophobic. And so what we do is try to tell people, you know, we're not homophobic, we're homoaversionists. And it's okay to have a healthy aversion to homosexuality. So, you know, we need to get strong in our language to come back and let them know that we're serious about where we stand. And so I think we have to be come very strong in our positions. And we can't back down anymore to these ridiculous words like homophobic. And so, and tolerance, you know. No, we don't have to be tolerant of everything, and that's okay. So,
well, I think, you know, of course, the point I always bring out is if you really care about homosexuals, if you're going to tell them what they're
that's
doing,
right.
It's going to kill themselves. If you're going to tell them what they are being used by their leaders mm-hmm. to promote an agenda that will destroy this country, and with that will destroy them, exactly as happened in Hitler's Germany.
Yes, and that is one thing I get into my book, too, very strongly, about the fact that there was such a very strong element of homosexuality in the German army.
Oh, because they can't stand for the people to realize that so many of the people who surrounded Adolf Hitler were themselves homosexuals. People like mm-hmm. Rudolf Hess, one of the closest confidants of Adolf Hitler. In fact, there's much to suggest that Hitler himself was certainly a perverted individual.
Yes, definitely. And I think that's a very strong point to make because one of the things I've noticed about the homosexual activists is that they want to be in our history books and they want the notice, but it always has to be good things. You know, there can never be anything written about them that isn't right and proper. And they have just suppressed all those things that happened during the German regime, Germany, and what they did. And they were very much a part of that, and it's the cause behind that element of homosexuality, their cause, that, you know, it was powerful. It was powerful because they wanted so much to be accepted at that time also. And so they had the Brotherhood of Homosexuals that really were very much part of the brown shirts. And, you know, they produced the power that that he wanted for his army. And they were very much a part of it. There's no doubt about it.
And, of course, so many of the guards in the prison camps were the sadists, homosexual sadists. I mean, 25% of homosexuality involves sadism and masochism. Mm-hmm. In fact, most Americans really don't understand what homosexuality involves. And if I could just put a plug in for a video we carry called The Gay Agenda, that came out almost a decade ago, but it actually changed the course of our society because it was shown to every member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, every Marine Corps general, and when Bill Clinton came in office, of course, he wanted to open up our army to homosexuality, and of course, the generals came to him and said, no way, we'll resign en masse, and Bill Clinton had to back down. You need to understand what homosexuality really involves, the tragedy of homosexuality, the degradation of homosexuality. And yet it's being taught as perfectly normal in our schools today. I wonder how God feels about that. I think that we ought to really ask that question. And will America be standing before the bar of judgment one day? Because nations cannot be judged in the next world, so they'll be judged in this world. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Georgiana, and of course we're going to be talking about her book, The Seeds of Deception. Georgiana, how can people get copies of your book?
Well, they can buy their book online, of course, at Amazon and some of the other bookstores online. They can also go to my website, which is www.georgianapresscar.com.
I want to spell that press car.
Yes, it's P-R-E-S-K-A-R. And Georgiana is G-E-O-R-G-I-A-N-A. And so you can order it that way. And also, if you go to that website, you can read a little bit about the book. There's some excerpts there also from the book, so you can have a little bit more of an idea of it. But, of course, this program gives a real good idea of some of the things that are in it. And I just thank you so much for me being able to share this information with people.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, we've talked about tolerance and we've talked about homosexuality. What this is about white privilege?
Yes. You know, that was one of the things when I was writing my book. I was absolutely shocked when I got on the website and started reading about this. Peggy McIntosh, who actually developed this program 18 years ago, has a paper out called White Privilege, and she goes around to different universities and she presents this, and now the universities are actually taking it into their campuses and offering it as classes. And it really is saying that people who are white have an advantage, and they have a privilege that isn't owed them, but we're not aware of it. And she goes into all these different points, which I bring out in my book, about maybe about 8 or 10 of them I bring out. She's got about 20 of them that indicate, and she gives different situations where she says that, you know, we are given the rights above them, you know, to get the housing we want and the educations we want and live the way we want, whereas they can't, you know. And her points are just so ridiculous that she brings up that I actually had a good time writing about it because I just disputed so many of them. I mean, they're just ridiculous things, but what it's done is that it's one of those things, it's like a paradox. So, you know, it's really brought up to cause confusion in the youth's mind, and they'll go, well, that could be true. That really could be true. Maybe she's right there, you know. Like, one of her things is, I can, if I wish, arrange to be in the company of people of my race most of the time. Well, isn't that an interesting statement? I mean, you've got to remember there's a percentage of races, you know. I mean, the black race makes up 12% of our population, so obviously they're not going to be able to be with their race all the time. However, when I worked at San Francisco General Hospital, I worked with a lot of people who weren't white. So, you know, there's, how can she make a statement like that? And yet, it's something that some people would say, well, that's really true.
Now, were you a nurse at San Francisco Hospital?
Yes, I was at San Francisco General Hospital. I worked in the acute neurosurgical unit there.
Okay, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Georgiana Prescar. We're talking about her book, Seeds of Deception. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, why, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Georgiana Prescar. We're talking about her book, Seeds of Deception, and, of course, what they're really teaching in our schools today. And this is certainly not isolated in one area. This is a nationwide program. How many states have adopted this this program of the change agents to alter the outlook of our children?
Yes, there's about 33 states right now that have done this, and it is in Europe also, and in Hong Kong and Tokyo and Manila and in Vancouver and Toronto and heaven only knows where else.
Is it in California?
Oh, it's big in California. They have a training session that goes on down south, and of course in the district that I'm in, which is Elk Grove, California, it's the second largest school district in the U.S., and they're priding themselves on the fact that they have just built this program through the past 4 to 5 years in this town and how much it's grown. And honestly, this town has changed dramatically in 5 years, and over 500 teachers have been through this program.
Well, do you think the teachers really understand what it's all about, that they are being trained as change agents? They're being trained not to educate but to indoctrinate,
right,
to alter the values and beliefs of our children.
Well, you know, they receive credits for these classes they go through. And so you say to yourself, well, if someone's been teaching all day long, do they want to go to a class where they have to take maybe math or English or history, you know, to go up the scale in the teaching field, so to speak, in order to get credits for this? Or do they want to go and sit around in a lovey-dovey circle of friends and share their thoughts and feelings, and they get credit for it? I mean, it's like amazing. So a lot of these people, and plus they're told, oh, it'll just benefit you so much, and you're going to learn so much and how to relate to your children in the classroom, and everybody loves each other. And, you know, love's a very powerful force. It kind of reminds me of the flower children of the 60s. You know, it's a very powerful force, and so these people are drawn into it, and once they get into it, they don't even understand what's happening to them anytime.
And they don't understand what this is to do is to destroy their individualism.
Yes, definitely. And then they just go right back into that classroom, and they, you know, they, I mean, some of the things are just unbelievable that I've talked to people who've gone through these programs. And, I mean, when you get into this whole oppression thing, and you start getting this white privilege laid on you, and you're sitting there listening to these other people talk about how what their lives are like, and then they're telling you, they make you feel guilty for being white, this is very serious. And so, and many of the youth that are going into these programs, especially the white males, are coming out of these seed programs apologizing for being white.
Well, let's go to Brian, who's calling us from Watsonville. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. So, Brian, go ahead.
Hi. I really do appreciate all the work that went into this book, and it's a vitally important book. I wanted to say that in the introduction to the Book of Joshua in the original Torah, God speaks to them before they take the land and tells them that they're to possess this land and drive the people off. He says, because the people there in that land are living very badly. They're doing this, they're doing that, they're putting their children through fire. And he specifically says, men are laying with other men as with a woman. And then he says, warns them, if when you get this land that I'm going to give you, if you take on their ways and you live like they lived, if you do this, if you do that, if you put your children through fire, and if, you know, sacrifice the fire, and if a man lays with another man, as with a woman, specifically, he says it two or three times there, I will cast you off the land that I have given you. So people might say, well, that's just the Bible, if you believe that way. But these particular prophets who wrote these things have been right for thousands of years. All the things they prophesied have come true. Now, if it was Nostradamus or someone speaking about these things, everyone would be carrying on the great psychic. But the fact is, the Bible is more accurate than any psychic that ever lived. Every single thing that has been predicted by these particular prophets has come true. And the Hebrews had a custom that if a prophet said, thus saith the Lord, and it didn't come true, they killed him.
Amen. That's why I never prophesy, because, first of all, I'm not smart enough to be a prophet. Second, God hasn't spoken to me. And third, I know what happens to prophets who do the wrong thing. I agree with you, Brian. You're absolutely right. And I mean, certainly, homosexuality is wrong because the Bible says it's wrong. But if you look at it purely from a non-Christian point of view, why look at what it does to them, look at the incidence of the diseases that they get, and these diseases are killing them, and they're spreading these diseases in our society. But not only that, they're actually actively recruiting within our schools, and they're trying to change our society.
I've been saying it for years. There's another issue, too, is that if someone doesn't want to look at it from a religious aspect, okay, let's put that all aside. Call it whatever you want. Let's look at it scientifically. Simple cause and effect.
Amen to that. Well, do you have a thought at all, Georgiana, from what Brian is saying?
Well, first of all, I wanted to comment on the religious part of that. I truly believe in our society today, even with some of your Christians, that they're not taking God seriously. You know, it's really true. I mean, they've kind of accepted God as the all-loving God, but they haven't accepted him as the person who cannot tell a lie. And when he says things are wrong, he means it. And if he says, you know, this is not appropriate behavior, you're going to pay the price one day for that. But aside from that, you're right. This has been going on a long time in terms of, like you said, I've been saying this for a long time. And we have been for many, many years trying to get people to understand and see this. But I really still believe that the last 100 years has really set up us in our thinking, in our university settings during the 60s, and all the things that have happened with our thought processes. We have set ourselves up through this, you know, the compromise. I think compromise is the most incredible, dangerous thing we have ever had in our lives, is not to be able to stand as parents and church leaders and educators and to be able to say right is right and wrong is wrong. And we've all gotten into that element. Everybody's guilty of it, you know, at certain times in their life. And until we make that stand, until we say, no, it is this and I'm not moving from it, we're not going to make any differences. We've got to be able to do that.
If I may say, there's a great resentment to authority now. Some of it is because so many of the kids were raised in daycare and they were greatly disappointed and felt betrayed and deserted by their parents, and the lack of justice in the daycare centers and all that has created a great resentment toward authority. And you've got a whole generation, many of them, that were raised that way. And this resentment to authority automatically rejects our country, our leaders, and the idea of God and religion, and they don't understand that the law that was given to us isn't because there's some demon kind of God waiting to hit people with a club if he can catch them doing wrong. It's love. It's saying, you know, don't touch the fire, don't jump in front of the bus, don't have this kind of sex, because simple science, you're going to wind up in very bad shape. You know, I always say there's nothing gay about it. Highest incidence of mental disease, highest incidence of suicide, right. Highest incidence of venereal disease. You know, there's nothing gay about it. And I wish we could retake the word gay.
Oh, I know.
You
know,
don our gay apparel.
Yeah. You know, I never intended
so
my...
Brian, I really appreciate you so much for calling. God bless you.
Thank you.
And I agree with everything you've said.
Yeah, nice. But thank you for the show and the work you do, Stan.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Let's go to... did you have a comment there before we go to
Roger? Well, I was just going to say that I'm very careful in my book not to use the word gay. I use homosexual throughout my book. I would not use the word gay.
Well, there are other words you could use, but I think probably you're better to stick with homosexual.
Well,
the words I would probably use would be a little stronger, but right now...
Well, yes, I wanted to do that, but I knew that was, you know, homosexual is fine.
Well, right now, of course, we have Roger calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. You have a question or comment?
Yeah, and of course, why use a euphemism when a merely descriptive term will do?
Well, now, let's just be. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Well, it's so rarely you're in error, Dr. Stan, that I would have occasion to correct you. But I think it was the congressional testimony you were referring to, where all those fearless generals were up there being grilled. Do you support Clinton opening up the military to homosexuals? And one by one, all those spinally deprived generals answered that they would follow orders. But that was not the question they were asked. And neither, sadly, were they brought back to answer the question they were asked by the, if it was the House or Senate or both.
What happened behind the scenes, I know because I was in the film, The Gay Agenda, and what happened was the generals went to Clinton behind the scenes and said, we're not going to go along with this. So
how did that get off the record somehow?
Right, that was not off the record. So anyway, in fact, everybody who was in that film, with one exception, had their careers destroyed. Anything else, Roger?
Yeah, okay, that makes more sense than that coalesces in my... brain. Well, God bless you all.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Eugene calling from Rochester, New York. How are you doing, Eugene?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
Doing fine. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do have a question. In Rochester, we have a big festival called the Image Out Festival. It's a gay and lesbian film festival. It's a really big festival. And one of the movies they're going to be showing is called Gay Pioneers. And the description of the movie is just about early homosexual... activism. And the description of the movie says that, you know, they would start out, dressed like people in middle America, dressed in suits and ties and that kind of stuff to show how normal they were. And, you know, obviously that's not the case anymore. And I was wondering what your guests could tell us about the, that movement, the origins of the homosexual movement in America and how it started out.
Do you get at all into the background of the homosexual movement at all?
Well, you know, in my book, I really do go into that and how it started during the 50s and how it slowly moved from a group of people, you know, who used to get together actually in small groups, interestingly enough, you know, and they were kind of like a hidden type thing. They didn't want to be known. And then eventually, of course, they started getting more radical. And so actually the homosexual element became very militant and very radical during the... later 60s and 70s and 80s. But what happened during the late 80s is that they actually had two people write a book called After the Ball, Madsen and Kirk, and After the Ball really presented the Homosexual Manifesto, which is what they'd been following, because they decided that rather than be militant, they would get into different techniques to bring the American people around. And it's a very deceptive thing they did. There were three different parts of it. That they use to deceive the American public and to really brainwash them into accepting them. And it's an interesting read, because when you read about it, you'll see how they have really gone through the three different stages, and now we're really into, the stages of conversion, really getting people over to the fact that they are perfectly normal and they're just, you know, like you and me. And that's where this whole marriage thing is coming in, and that's where they're trying to get to now. So it is a very interesting and very powerful movement that went from hidden to radical, militant, into very much of a strategy to to win the people over using such things as victimization and, you know, the radio, the TV, pictures in magazines. Like, they're going to show this video, you know, and they're going to portray these people as, you know, every day, you and me, you know?
Eugene, there's a book. It's called What's Wrong with Harry Hay? Harry Hay is the man who began the gay liberation movement, and it's the story of a young man who was married, had a couple of children. He was a dedicated communist. His wife was a dedicated communist, and he was allowed by the Communist Party. Of course, supposedly the Communist Party doesn't like homosexuals, doesn't approve of it, but he was welcomed into the communist movement, and he was actually allowed to leave the communist movement to form an organization that would of homosexuals would be dedicated to the destruction of the moral fabric of our society. Now, he formed something called the Mattachine Society, and of course, it was out of that came the riots in New York City, the Stonewall riots. But what everybody has missed is the fact that Harry Hay was a Crowleyite. And we carry a video that's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 4 or the 10 hour version. It goes into Harry Hay. What nobody will tell you is that he was into Crowleyism, he was into Satanism. That is the origin of communism, it's the origin of the world revolution. Then behind this whole homosexual movement are dark spiritual forces, and unfortunately these people really have in many respects sold their souls for the sexual gratification, just as the musicians have sold their souls for rock and roll. If you haven't seen those videos, you need to, and of course you need to get Georgiana's wonderful book, Seeds of Deception. Anything else, Eugene?
Yes, I wonder. I hear kind of often about a book called The Velvet Underground, and there's a sequel to it too, and I wonder what kind of influence that book might have had on this movement, if you guys are familiar with that book at all. It's a book about, it's kind of like a psychologist, something like that, doing a study on the people next door and how, you know, you don't know what your neighbors are really like, but they're really into sadomasochism and that kind of thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's so many sick things out there, and we should be really pray for these people and pray for their salvation. You know, that's what we have to do, and the strongest weapon we have is prayer.
I think that's very, very important that you mention that, because that's the one thing I had to do before writing my book. I had to make sure I came from a place of love. That, you know, seriously, for the person, you know, I mean, it was very difficult to write some of this material, so I had to be careful of that. And I also wanted to thank you, Dr. Stone, for mentioning that, because what you talked about with Hay is in my book, too. I just didn't really talk about that when you asked me that question, but thank you for that input with that, with him.
All right. Anything else, Eugene?
No, that's fine.
Are you listening to us on shortwave or internet?
Shortwave.
Okay, good. Glad to have you, and please tell all your friends to start listening.
Thank you.
Good night. God bless. Okay, that was Eugene calling from Rochester, New York, and, well, of course, we're getting down. We've only got a very, very few minutes left.
Oh, my goodness.
The time goes very quickly. I want you to tell our listeners again how they can get copies of your book, Seeds of Deception.
Okay, it's Seeds of Deception, Planting Destruction of America's Children, and you can go to Amazon.com or any of the other online bookstores to order. You can also go to a website, www.georgianapresscar.com, and you can read about it and order it from Author House. And Georgiana is GeorgianaPrescar.
All right, well, I think it's so vitally important that people understand that what is happening is not happening by accident. There is a master plan out there. There really are people who have an agenda, and they want to transform our society. They hate traditional Americanism because it was founded on biblical standards of absolutes of right and wrong. It was founded on patriotism, of love of God and of family and country, and these people despise all of those things. Unfortunately, they've gotten into our educational system, they put their people onto our school boards, and now they're training our teachers, and many of these teachers are victims of the flower generation. They really don't understand what's going on today, and they get swept up in this dialectical process of everything is a love fest. We give up our standards, we give up right and wrong, we tolerate everything except, of course, Christianity, and we're in real trouble as a nation. Well, of course, time is just about out. We're going to have to say goodbye to at least some of our stations as far as Georgiana is concerned. And then when we get back here in just a moment, we're going to wrap up this evening's program. And, of course, we hope that many of you will be listening next week when we're back here once again at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Georgiana Preskar, and we're talking about her book, Seeds of Deception, and she's written a book. It's only been out about a month, and of course, getting a book distributed is a real tough problem. Have you been able to get on radio, or how are you actually going about getting the book distributed, Georgiana?
Well, it is an interesting experience, that's for certain. First of all, I do a lot of praying about it. I know it's going in a good direction. And I have been on a few of the radio stations in Sacramento, and Phyllis Schlafly had me on her nationwide radio station. And so you're about the fifth or sixth person that's had me on the radio station. And I have been working with what they call a media valet from the actual publishing company, but that's going to be up in another week. So if you have any suggestions, I would really appreciate it.
Well, I will talk to you off the air, and we'll schedule for our other programs. We actually do four different audiences, and I'll give you the benefit of what little I've learned of having tried to get a couple of books distributed. And, of course, having Phyllis Schlafly as a friend, certainly she's got a tremendous audience out across America, and Phyllis is a very amazing woman, does a tremendous job. And, and of course, as you know, she gets a tremendous response from her programs, which are her really across the nation. So, but circulating a book today with the degree of control that exists is a difficult thing to do, but I'll certainly do everything I can to help. Well, we've got just about a minute and a half left before I have to let you go. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, my parting thoughts are that I really believe that we owe our children the best education that we can give them, and I think that that is to give them a strong sense of a moral code. And that is based on the principles of God. It's based on the principles of the founding fathers. And I think we have to be very much aware of what is going on and take responsibility to deliver the messages to people and stand tall and strong, be courageous, and do not compromise. We must not compromise. And I think that with the right words and the right messages, if we take a stand now, that we can hopefully contribute to keeping our country what we would like it to be for our future generations.
And, of course, if we don't get involved, who will? And if
that's
not
right.
Now, when? This
exactly
is a phrase that Ronald Reagan used, but it's really so true. Nations are lost when good people are not involved. And it's about time that the Christians of this country, that the Jewish people that believe in traditional values, that we join together, we stop having the Protestants fighting the Catholics and Catholics fighting the Protestants. And I see this all the time. Everybody wants to tell me about all the things they disagree with the Catholics, and they totally ignore the real enemy, and those are the ones who would destroy this nation.
Right.
And I think it's about time that people woke up and understand they're being manipulated, and they better start deciding what's really right and wrong. Georgiana, God bless you. Thank you for everything you've done.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me on the program.
Good night. God
bless you. Thank
you,
and God bless you, too.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there calling us from across America, why, we, of course, are listening to us across America. We hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we reach out, trying to let people understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And, of course, as you begin looking behind the scenes, you find out that there really are secret organizations working within our society. They have one common goal, and there are many of them. They're not one. But they are anti-Christian. They would destroy the foundations of this country. And until you understand that we do have enemies, we do have domestic enemies, and some of them are working within our medium, they're working within our great tax-exempt foundations, they're working within our corporations, they're working within our government. Until people understand that, why, we will continue losing. Those of you, of course, who would like to get a free copy of our catalog, perhaps a free copy of our latest newsletter, our September newsletter, which we'd be glad to send you free of charge if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-844-8927. Our September newsletter goes into the background of the control of the media in the United States and simply quotes from Ben Bekdakian's book, the seventh edition of his book. This one is called The New Media Monopoly, which incidentally we will be carrying. That's The New Media Monopoly. And that five mega corporations dominate the American media and effectively control what the American people hear, see, read, and ultimately what they believe. And until we understand that there really is this force that's out there, and of course behind that are the spirits of forces which have provided the funding and energized this whole movement, you really can't understand what's going on. But I believe our September newsletter is an excellent one. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. And it goes into where we're headed financially if the American people don't get involved. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to attending the meeting we're having on November the 6th here in the North Shore of Monterey Bay, a beautiful, beautiful area to come and to visit. It's an all-day-long session, going to start at 8:45 in the morning, and a lunch will be served going to 5 in the evening. We're bringing in outside speakers, and I think you'll find it an exciting time. We hope that many of you will give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and make your reservations and bring your friends. We'd like to get a good turnout. And, of course, we also hope you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And look at the various items that we have there. We carry the various Berkey items. We carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, Sanzian radios, and, of course, the Miracle 2 products. And some of these things do help us as far as our financing what we do, but we're primarily dependent upon our listeners who listen to our programs and believe what we say and share our concern about what's happening, and the concern of Georgiana, who was with us this last hour, who's done a tremendous job of writing about what's going on. So, of course, if you go to our website at radioliberty.com, you can listen to our archive programs, and you can listen to our live programs when they're on, and of course, we're on the whole, I think, five different internets, internet radio, American News Net at 7 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific time, GCN Live, and 4 to 5, the Radio Liberty, and, of course, 8 to 10, why we're on rbnlive.com. We're on soundwave2000.com, and, again, radioliberty.com. We have an opportunity to reach people, but we have to depend on those of you in the audience to let them know about our programs. Feel free to copy our programs, any of the videos we've made, any of the tape sets we've made, as long as you're not making a profit from them. Why, you're welcome to copy them. Of course, we hope that you'll get these items from us, circulate the information, and then pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.